Hello and welcome to the 538 Politics Podcast. I'm Galen Druk and this is Mueller Talks. It's a slightly modified version of our series known as Mueller Talk. Mueller Talks, of course, because former counsel Robert Mueller actually spent the day talking. He mostly spoke in short, several-word answers. So, you know, he wasn't all that talkative, but at rare points he did go into some detail and share some of his own assessments. And of course, I'm referring to Mueller's congressional testimony. After months of back and forth, he answered questions from lawmakers in the House Judiciary and Intelligence Committees on his report about Russian interference in the 2016 election and any attempts by the president to obstruct that investigation. Here with me to discuss the main takeaways from the hearings are politics editor Sarah Frostenson. How's it going, Sarah?
Hey, Galen. Good.
We just spent hours and hours and hours in the newsroom watching the hearing. Riveting stuff. Also here with us is senior writer Amelia Thompson-DeVoe. How are you, Amelia?
I am great.
Was the hearing just as exciting from Chicago as it was from New York?
I can only imagine more exciting because it started an hour earlier for me. So I was on at 7:30 in the morning.
All right. Well, and also before we begin, I want to remind listeners that next week, about a week from when you are hearing this, we have a live show in Detroit. That's August 1st. So get your tickets at 538.com/live. We're going to be talking about the debates in Detroit. We're also going to be talking about the role that Michigan will play in the 2020 election. It'll be a lot of fun. It'll be somewhat of a coming home for our editor-in-chief, Nate Silver, who is from Michigan. In any case, we hope to see you there, 538.com/live. Let's get into it. Sarah, let's start with you. What are your top-line takeaways from the hearings today?
Today was supposed to be an opportunity for Americans to hear, in Robert Mueller's own words, what his report was about. That didn't really happen. If anything, the report was read mostly by those questioning him, whether that was Democrats or Republicans. And then in terms of the stakes today, Democrats needed to have it shed new light, be theatrical, show that, look, you know, Mueller wanted to have obstruction of justice charges against Trump, but couldn't do that because he's president. There was a moment we thought that was true. That wasn't true. There was no further clarity there.
You're talking there about, you know, at one point, Representative Ted Lieu said to Robert Mueller, if not for these OLC guidelines that prevent indicting a sitting president, would you have brought charges? And he said yes, and then everyone was like, oh my goodness, okay,
right.
He just made news, but then what happened?
Well, so then he actually followed up almost immediately thereafter with Lesko to say, I'd have to look more closely at it, but then he began the second hearing in front of the Intelligence Committee to say, no, that's not what I meant, just to dispel any confusion there. So in terms of takeaways then, and Amelia can speak to this more, I thought we got insight on the fact that he didn't want to talk about Trump specifically, but yes, Russian interference in the election, it happened, and it's a big problem, and we should expect it not necessarily to happen again in 2020. I don't want to be overly dramatic or ominous here, but just that is a vulnerability. Other countries are also trying to beef up their election hacking abilities, and it's just something that we're not dealing with as a country. And that, to me, was where the hearing went today.
Well, there was a moment where he said during the hearings today that not only should we expect this to happen in the future, interference in American elections, but that it's actually happening as we sit here right now. That seemed like a topic that he was more willing to kind of harp on and elaborate on than obstruction of justice or, you know, what happened during the 2016 election between the Trump campaign and Russia. All right, Amelia, what are your top line takeaways?
We sort of knew going into this that it was going to be really hard to get Mueller to talk about anything that wasn't in the report. And so we just heard that over and over and over again today, Mueller saying, you'll have to refer to the report. If that's what's in the report, then that's what I said in response to all manner of questions. But Sarah's absolutely right that the places where sort of Mueller was more responsive, engaged more with the Democrats in particular, and even editorialized just a tiny bit, were around election interference. In particular, he had a moment that stood out where he was asked about President Trump's praise of WikiLeaks, and he said that it was problematic, and that was an understatement, which, you know, after hearing Mueller sort of talk in very muted tones for most of the hearings, you know, that was, those were very harsh words in the context. And he also warned in a back and forth about whether campaigns were going to be accepting help from foreign governments, that he expected to see more of that. So it seemed pretty clear that the second hearing, the Intelligence Committee hearing about election interference, was what Mueller was more concerned with. And in a way, it's funny because I was expecting that to be the harder hearing for the Democrats, because the report said pretty clearly that they hadn't found sufficient evidence that the Trump campaign had criminally conspired with Russia to interfere in the election. So in that sense, that finding was better for Trump than the more ambiguous obstruction of justice conclusion. But I think in a way that kind of freed the Democrats to create a more coherent narrative. And the narrative that came out of that hearing was really, you know, let's set aside the question of whether the Trump campaign committed a crime here. They were willing to accept help from a foreign adversary. They did not go to the officials when they were approached with that assistance. And that's a threat. That was sort of the Democrats' big takeaway. And I thought that was much clearer and more compelling than what we heard in the morning, which was a lot of, you know, people, frankly, pretty unsuccessfully trying to pin Mueller down on whether he would have indicted Trump for obstruction of justice if he could have.
And just to clarify here for listeners who may not have been following this throughout the day, in the morning, the Judiciary Committee spoke with Robert Mueller about obstruction of justice, which is volume two in the report. And then in the afternoon, the Intelligence Committee asked Mueller questions about volume one, which is Russian interference in the 2016 election. So those are our top line takeaways. Did we fundamentally learn anything new today?
Well, finally, at the end of the Intelligence Committee hearing, someone asked a question that I had been waiting for all day, which was why Donald Trump wasn't subpoenaed by the Mueller team. They had been pursuing a sit-down interview with him for more than a year and ended up just accepting written responses that they said in the report were not adequate. And Mueller was pretty candid. He basically said that they sort of weighed the evidence, you know, that they thought they might be able to get from a sit-down interview with Trump against the fact that if the president were subpoenaed, there would be a lengthy legal battle. It would take a lot of time and it would really delay their ability to wrap up the investigation. And they decided that those time constraints were sort of more important. And I thought that was fascinating that he was so open about that. And it really showed, you know, this was a very fast investigation in the scope of other special counsel investigations. And Mueller was clearly sort of aware, for whatever reason, that he wanted to finish this very quickly, or as quickly as he could.
And remind me, Amelia, did he go on to say why he wanted to wrap it up so quickly? Because I know that other special counsel investigations have spanned years. So it was kind of, you know, what was the urgency? And I'm trying to remember how he addressed Maloney's question on this.
I don't think he really said specifically what the urgency was. And, you know, I could imagine a couple of different reasons. Past special counsel investigations did span years, but they were also accused of overreach and wasting resources. We heard a lot today, or not a lot, but a couple times about how much the Mueller investigation cost. So that's been a frequent criticism of past special counsel investigations. They've been criticized for sort of expanding beyond their purview. That's one of the reasons that we really haven't had as many of these investigations, because a law that allowed them to be more frequent was ended in the late 1990s, around 2000, because people really felt that they were kind of running amok. And so I think, you know, if I had to speculate, I would imagine that he was conscious of not wanting to be perceived as running amok. The other sort of thing you have to wonder about is, too, he was operating under the constant threat of being fired. And so, you know, he didn't say this explicitly. Obviously, we don't know if this was the case, but I think it's certainly plausible that that might have been a consideration as well.
There were a lot of key questions that got asked throughout the day that didn't necessarily reveal new information, but were important moments. So the most pressing issues that the lawmakers wanted to get to throughout the day, what were some of those questions and how did Mueller respond?
So again, he addressed this in the report, but it was asked repeatedly if he believed that a president who committed a crime could be charged after leaving office. And he did go on the record to say yes. And so that was, again, I think, more clarity. It doesn't advance impeachment proceedings. I mean, that motion was brought to the floor last week. And yes, 40% of House Democrats were in favor of impeachment proceedings. But to be clear, that means 60% weren't. I don't think that this is going to reopen that motion. In fact, I was seeing earlier today that Al Green, the Texas congressman who brought it to the floor last week, was saying that of what he was watching of today's testimony, he didn't think it was a game changer for Democrats. And that's coming from the Democrat who tried to bring impeachment to the floor. So there's still that opening that, yes, once Trump has left office, that sure, he can be charged with a crime and it can go through the legal processes there. But the takeaway I got from that is that won't be happening anytime soon, but it exists as an option if, in theory, Democrats wanted to push it.
Well, and just to jump in there, there was also an interesting moment where Mike Quigley on the Intelligence Committee asked basically, you know, what happens if the statute of limitations on a crime runs out while a president is in office? Does that sort of remove the ability to prosecute? And Mueller really couldn't answer that. So that was sort of a moment where that was a good question, I thought, that Quigley asked, and Mueller seemed to, you know, just kind of not know.
In terms of also key questions, the first few moments of the first hearing was Representative Jerry Nadler asking whether or not the report exonerated Trump. And Mueller said pretty bluntly, no. Anybody who, even if you didn't read the report and had just seen, you know, the most cursory excerpts from it, you knew that. But that was a clip that Democrats wanted to get on the airwaves for primetime news this evening. So when it comes to whether or not Trump obstructed justice, what was the most that Mueller was willing to say on that today?
He sort of basically repeated what was in the report, which is that he concluded early on that because of this OLC opinion, he wasn't going to be able to indict the president while he was still in the White House, but that he still investigated. And that was something that Republicans came back to a lot. They kept saying, you know, if you couldn't indict him, why did you investigate him? You know, isn't that sort of, you know, you weren't able to exonerate him. Isn't that kind of treating him differently than anyone else would be treated in the criminal justice system? And Mueller was not that clear about this. I mean, I think it was actually a little bit clearer in the report that his reasoning for continuing the investigation was basically, well, you know, other people might have committed crimes, not the president, but sort of adjacent to this obstruction of justice investigation. And also, you know, the president could be prosecuted later. He kind of skirted those justifications, didn't sort of address them very directly. But that was the subject of a lot of back and forth with Republicans.
Yeah, the Republicans today had to attack his legitimacy in some ways, right? And so I think you saw that through both trying to get at the origins of, well, why did the FBI investigation start? And Mueller wasn't going to touch that, right? But then I do think, and it was a moment with the Republican Mike Turner from Ohio, where he was grilling Mueller on this idea of, well, you don't have, the attorney general doesn't have the power to exonerate the president. You don't have the power to exonerate the president. And in the first hearing, Ratcliffe, also a Republican, drilled into this idea of Mueller had somehow broken protocol because his report was about decisions that weren't ultimately reached, when it's really more the paradox that you've written about, Amelia, that the special counsel's hobbled. He can't he can indict a sitting president, but it doesn't mean he can't investigate the crimes, see if there are people within the administration that did something. I thought Republicans actually were they were definitely more effective in the first hearing on this question, trying to attack some of the legitimacy.
In the first hearing in particular, as we've mentioned, Mueller did not say a lot. A lot of his answers were single words or just referring lawmakers back to the report. Democrats' goal out of this process was to have Americans hear the Mueller report from Mueller himself. Was the fact that he was only willing to give short answers prevent Democrats from achieving their goal ultimately?
I mean, that's something I think we'll sort of have to see. I mean, obviously, most people are not going to be digesting these hearings the way we did by watching the entire 7 hours. And they'll just be seeing the clips and analysis and news afterward. And it did seem that Mueller's sort of not just refusal to read the report himself, but also there were moments when it seemed like the Democrats were trying to get him to respond in full sentences that they could use. You know, sort of they would ask questions, and one way to answer it would have been to kind of restate what they had been saying in the question, and that would have been more usable in a soundbite, and they didn't get very many of those. But I did think there were a few moments where in the first hearing where they were sort of going back and forth about the question of obstruction of justice that could make for potentially good TV. I think it's a little bit early to say for sure sort of whether they were successful in their goal of essentially trying to deliver the Mueller report to the American public in a different form, because it's very long. Most people haven't read it. It was always going to be a real challenge, and I don't necessarily think they pulled it off, but I'm hesitant to say for sure that it didn't work at this point.
It's a hard format, right? Because it's not the same questioner. It's broken up. The other thing, though, that I'm curious about, and I don't think we'll get an answer, but is if Mueller and his team kind of threw Democrats a curveball at the end. NBC News had broken during the hearing this idea that surrounding the negotiations, the team actually declined to have Mueller read from the report. So I wonder when Democrats learned that and if they had to scramble at the last minute to alter their strategy a little.
Yeah, so we ultimately couldn't actually hear Mueller right. deliver the report in his own words. It was left to the lawmakers reading it and then him just saying, okay, yeah, like you have acknowledged what is in the report, so right. Next question or whatever.
I also think, though, Sarah, your point about the format is really important, too, because it was sort of this bouncing back and forth between Republicans and Democrats, and they had 5 minutes, but sometimes they would cede their time to other people. And it did make it sort of a little bit hard to track. And I think it also made it hard for both sides to build momentum and really create a narrative that was adding, with each person sort of adding to what the other one had said. You know, the Democrats were trying to do that by saying, we're going to highlight what we think are the major episodes of obstruction in the report. And they were very clear about signposting that. But when you're going back and forth in that way, I mean, it's just really, really hard to have any sense of coherence or a narrative thread. And that just seems like with this format, really, really hard to get around.
All right, let's talk a little bit more about that second hearing. But before we do, today's podcast is brought to you by Lightstream. Are you tired of credit card bills with high interest rates? Ready to pay off your credit card balances and start saving money? Get a credit card consolidation loan from Lightstream with rates as low as 5.95% APR with autopay. That's lower than the average credit card interest rate of over 19% APR. You can get a loan from $5,000 to $100,000 with no fee. The rate is fixed, so it will never go up over the lifetime of the loan. Plus, you can even get your money in your bank account as soon as the day you apply. Apply now to get a special interest rate discount. The only way to get that discount is to go to lightstream.com/538. That's lightstream.com/538. The numbers, not the letters. Subject to credit approval, rate includes 0.5% auto pay discount. Terms and conditions apply, and offers are subject to change without notice. Visit lightstream.com/538 for more information. All right, we're back. In the second hearing today, which was about Russia's interference in the 2016 election, Mueller was willing to give slightly longer answers. What was he willing to say? What did we, maybe if we didn't learn much because we have actually read the report, what kind of narrative was established via television if that's the goal of this process?
I think we learned that this person who spent almost 2 years really steeped in the question of what happened in the 2016 election and its aftermath is really, really worried about election interference, not just in 2016, but in an ongoing way. And that was one thing sort of in the hearing, I wouldn't say it was a consistent thread, but we did sort of get some kind of future and present focused questions. So it wasn't just about dissecting what happened in 2016, but also thinking about the threat that countries like Russia continue to pose for election security. And that was sort of clearly what Mueller wanted to be talking about. And so I think in that sense, it was much easier to create a coherent narrative. But even if we didn't, you know, necessarily learn anything that wasn't in the report, I think we learned very clearly that that's sort of the priority for Mueller and the thing that he wanted the American people to really be paying attention to.
Right. And I think the tension, though, in all of this was even though he was willing to speak to this idea of election vulnerabilities existing in the U.S., and that the fact, you know, it is illegal for campaigns to accept intel from a foreign country, he still wasn't going to then make that connection back to Trump and say that something went wrong there. And maybe that was just the tension inherent within the hearings today that, you know, Democrats wanted to push him on that. He wanted to broaden it out. And then in terms, though, of where that took the narrative, it wasn't even in the 2018 midterms, honestly, that we talked that much about the risk that foreign countries posed in interfering our elections. I'm curious if that really will be at the forefront here in 2020. I mean, the polls back from March, but when you ask people like, well, what are some of the most important issues? Russia doesn't come up. I'd be surprised if fears around the election being hacked are at top of people's minds. So it was powerful and that he pushed the conversation in that direction. But I still don't know if it's going to ultimately like change the narrative here.
And also, when it comes to anything that Mueller says, it rests on his credibility with the American public. We've been tracking a little bit where his credibility stands throughout this entire investigation. Where does it stand today, and how has that changed over time?
So, you know, one of the things I was really struck by in the hearings today is that Robert Mueller, he's a Republican, and he was, when he was appointed, he was hailed by Republicans and Democrats as being this sort of very fair and trustworthy person who was going to take on this big task. He was treated by the Republicans, you know, I think not completely uniformly, but by a lot of them much more like an opponent in the hearings today. And I think, you know, that's reflected somewhat in the public opinion when we look at approval of Robert Mueller's job performance. Republicans pretty quickly developed a negative view of Mueller, and that persisted pretty much through his whole investigation. They actually, his favorability rating among Republicans went up when Barr's summary was released in March, and then when the full report was released, and it's gone down a bit since then. And Democrats in general have, you know, had much warmer feelings toward Mueller. I do think the Republicans were not very successful today in undermining Mueller's credibility. I think, though, that's partially because Mueller has been very careful to stick to his report. He doesn't go out on a limb. He doesn't editorialize. He hasn't made anything approaching a comment about whether he thinks something like impeachment would be warranted. And I think that's sort of the tension. You know, obviously there's something of a partisan divide on his credibility, but I think it hasn't been worse because he hasn't sort of come out as this partisan figure. I don't know if that changes after today.
Is he above water with the American public broadly?
So this is back from February, but at the time, in a Washington Post poll, 51% of adults approved of the way that Mueller is handling the investigation. And again, there is going to be that partisan split that Amelia was talking about that we see in his job approval ratings. But to the point that he has not been a hugely polarizing figure, I think that's right.
Yeah. And Amelia, you said that Republicans didn't necessarily achieve discrediting him or impeaching him as a witness, so to speak. There were points during the hearing today where his investigation, his report, was even called un-American, and he just didn't respond in any way. And it seemed kind of odd that he didn't, you know, defend his report at all. Do you think that that made him more credible, or did those statements from Republicans kind of tear him down a little bit and make the report look worse?
Well, I mean, in fairness, I think there were a couple of moments where he did sort of fight back against some of the criticisms that have been pretty commonly leveled against him and made their way into the hearing, like the idea that he hired a lot of people who are Democrats and were biased against Trump. He did respond to say, basically, I don't consider people's political affiliations. I consider whether they can do the job. And he seemed pretty annoyed by the idea that, you know, he was hiring people because they were partisans or that he had a biased team. So I think he did sort of punch back a little bit. Mueller is such a by-the-book person. He seems really unwilling to get into the mud. And I think it depends on the audience. You know, I think there are certainly audiences where the fact that he was called un-American and he, you know, he didn't really respond or fight back might make him look worse. I also think those are probably people who are inclined to not have a very favorable view of him anyway. You know, more than I think necessarily making him more or less credible, it just, he's just kind of not of this political moment. You know, he didn't seem to really be engaging with the hearing in the way, for example, that Attorney General Bill Barr did a few months ago, or the way that James Comey has done. And so, you know, that was really what struck me. He just seemed to not be willing to engage at all with the way that a congressional hearing like this unfolds in this hyper-partisan moment.
I think that's key, the hyper-partisan bit. Like, I believe the universe in which 2 weeks from now, his job approval rating is worse among Republicans. There was that moment where Debbie Lesko was trying to go through all the different outlets he cited in the report. And I think the tactic there was supposed to be you're not really uncovering anything new. You're also biasing it towards some mainstream outlets that maybe aren't telling the full story. So I do think you can debate the effectiveness of actually diminishing his credibility. I think you're going to see further, though, entrenchment into the different partisan camps here.
What do Americans, though, think at this point about the conclusions of the Mueller report, right? Because they could be different depending on where you get your news.
Yeah, so this is what kind of made me skeptical going into the hearing, that this was going to have much of an impact on public opinion, because there's been polling about what do people think Mueller's report said about obstruction of justice since April. And there's a huge partisan divide. There was a YouGov, The Economist poll that was conducted in late June, and 83% of Democrats think Trump tried to obstruct the investigation, compared to only 16% of Republicans. And that stayed really consistent since the report came out. There was another Pew survey that came out yesterday that I mentioned in the live blog, but it's about views of what Trump is doing to prevent future election interference. And again, you see 80% of Republicans who are saying that they're somewhat or very confident that the Trump administration is making a serious effort to prevent Russia from influencing future U.S. elections, compared to about 15% of Democrats. So people's views on these issues are really, really locked in. And so I think that is really the challenge in a hearing like the one today. If you go in with a strong opinion and you're seeing these clips, there's plenty of fodder to reinforce whatever view you already had.
And on the subject of election security, so in 2017, Politico did this mass survey of 50 different states to see, okay, what are you doing to get money to improve election security in your state? And only 10 states actually requested funds. And of those 10, 6 got them. And it's just, that to me is mind-boggling, because it's just, it's not being taken seriously as an issue.
Do we expect in any way that that will change after this hearing? It sounds like no. Like, we already know that the track record is that people take from these experiences the partisan soundbites that they want.
Well, I guess the other thing, too, is Mueller was willing to say that, yes, this poses a real threat to America, but he wouldn't go on then to say, I think it actually impacted the election. So that's always kind of been the problem with this, too, right, is it's a problem, but I don't actually know what the consequence of it was. And I think that makes it really hard then as a voter or just someone who's interested in this to know.
And I think, you know, in some ways it's a kind of unknowable answer, even for people who, if we knew the answer, would be totally willing to say it. I think in general, Nate at least has been skeptical of the role that Russian interference played in, you know, changing the outcome of the election. But of course, it was very close, and it's hard to say. He's been more of a Comeyite in believing that Comey's letter was what swung the 2016 election. As we wrap up, what do we believe the long-term political repercussions to be? And it's okay to say that there are none if you believe that these hearings had no impact. What do you guys think?
I think Sarah's probably right that it's, you know, we're not going to see a bunch of Democrats suddenly turning around and saying, oh, I was wrong. We need to actually start impeachment hearings tomorrow. The hearings were probably, you know, good for the Democrats at the margins. I think keeping the Mueller report in the headlines is probably good for them just because it sort of keeps people from forgetting about this big scandal that, you know, really loomed over Trump's entire presidency so far. So that's not bad for them. I think what it doesn't do is sort of make it easier for them to move ahead in their investigations of Trump and his administration, where they've basically just been facing this across the board stonewalling from Trump, and they've been struggling to respond, and they're trying to respond through the courts, but that's extremely slow. And I don't think it necessarily gave any momentum to the impeachment effort, and I don't know how much it's going to sort of strengthen their case with the American people that they really need to do these investigations. Insofar as this stays in the headlines for a little while longer, I think that's good for them in some ways.
I'm not sure that it's good for Democrats because Robert Mueller, you know, he was subpoenaed to be there. He didn't want to be there. He wasn't the most engaging witness for all of the reasons we've mentioned. Trump has been crowing on Twitter that, you know, no collusion. And I think because it wasn't a gotcha moment, that it can be spun in a way of like, just please stop the hearing. So I think, Amelia, you're right. Like, the appetite for more investigations among the public is probably going to be low. I'd be interested to see some polling on that. There was no one else on the campaign trail who called for impeachment today. So I think at this point, Democrats should move on.
This has become somewhat of a theme where the party out of power, when they have the ability to do so, investigate the president that is of the opposing party. They hold these public hearings. Do we know from historical precedent whether hearings like this are effective in smearing a sitting president? Was it effective against President Obama? Does it seem effective against President Trump so far?
They've been effective in the past. There's been research showing that in past administrations, more days of congressional hearings have dragged down approval ratings by, you know, a fairly considerable amount. It seems, though, in this era where presidential approval ratings just don't fluctuate very much, that there may be less room for something like congressional investigations to have an impact on an approval rating. I mean, you know, it's possible that continuing the drumbeat of investigations is keeping Trump's approval rating from moving up. I think the other thing that's just been really hard for the Democrats is this was a big deal for them getting Mueller. They have been having a lot of trouble having splashy, high-profile hearings because the Trump administration has just not been cooperating with them in any way. And so, you know, I don't think we necessarily had evidence that something like a one-off hearing like today, even in an era where there was sort of more room to move the president's approval rating, that would have done that. It's sort of more this steady drumbeat, lots of hearings, continued focus, media attention. And so it's just been really challenging for the Democrats to get that. And, you know, it's also possible that that's why it just doesn't seem like they're getting a lot of results.
I think that's right. Jeff Skelly had looked at presidential approval ratings earlier this year, all the way back to Truman. And right, Obama's, you know, had a very small range in which it moved, as does Trump's. You know, the political scientists who have been studying this are now less sure that these congressional hearings will have as much of an effect, because, you know, the next study I want to see is like, what is the fatigue around these? If you're always, as the opposition party, trying to investigate the party in power, does that really help you?
All right. Well, I think that's about it from us. Is this the last we will hear from Robert Mueller, and therefore the last Mueller talk or Mueller talks of all time?
I mean, I hate to say never, Galen, because I have thought in many episodes of Mueller talk that it was the last episode of Mueller talk, but Mueller did seem sort of pretty excited by the idea that he was no longer a federal employee, and so I think this may be our last one.
I think so.
All right. And with that, we conclude our Mueller talk series. So thank you, Sarah.
Thanks, Galen.
Thank you, Amelia.
Thanks, Galen.
And before we go, a plug that I mentioned earlier this week, 538 now has a store. So if you want t-shirts, hats, bags, all kinds of fun 538 swag, you can get it at 538.com/store. Go check it out.
T-shirts. Woo!
Yeah.
Hoodies.
538.com/store. My name is Galen Druk. Tony Chow is in the control room. Our intern is Jake Arlo. You can get in touch by emailing us at podcasts@538.com. You can also, of course, tweet at us with any questions or comments. If you're a fan of the show, leave us a rating or a review in the Apple Podcast Store or tell someone about us. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you soon.